One. Hello, everybody. This is Andy Lopez, better known as the Invisible Gardener. Sorry about the delay. We're going through a whole bunch of stuff here. Usually, you know, right now I'm trying to figure out how to best do all this different thing. Like, I really need a little studio. But because normally I like to do some music intertwined with stuff and all kinds of things, but we're just going to go straight to the show. Hey, Deborah, you there?
How are you?
Do what, Deborah? I can't hear you.
Well, I'm here.
Oh, cool. Hey, so I try I have a Mac and a PC, and sometimes the Macs and the PC don't want to talk to each other. That's what they're having right now. They're having like a little, I'm not talking to each other. So, okay, fine. So I'm doing the Skype and I'm doing my music on the same PC, and it's not an easy trick because you get all kinds of feedback and it's kind of weird.
Sure.
So I'm not going to do any music or anything like that today. We're just going to go through. Why don't you tell the folks about, how do you pronounce her name, Banita?
Yeah, our guest today is a certified midwife named Banita Lott. She's from Northern California. She's also an RN, a BSN, and she's a cesarean prevention and holistic birth expert. She's got 35 years of experience, has attended 1,500 deliveries in her career as an RN and midwife, has attended birth and delivered babies in hospitals, medical centers, independent birth centers, and in people's individual homes. And she's well known for her 10-year professional home birth practice. And she's very experienced in water births. So we would like to welcome Banita, if she's on the line, and also her website, the wonderful, wonderful website. It's awakeningbirthnow.com.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, Banita. How are you?
Hello.
I'm doing great. Thank you. Hi, Andrew.
How are you doing?
Good. It's the first time we've actually heard each other's voices, huh?
Well, that's interesting you say that because I don't hear my voice anymore. I'm having all kinds of issues here. I try not to do an echo. I bet you're hearing an echo now, aren't you? No?
I don't
hear it.
Well, it's probably me. I'm just echoing everywhere today. I don't know. It's okay. It's all right. I'll be all right. Just don't mind me. Anyway, so I'm sorry. I've been on for, I haven't gone to sleep in about 3 years.
Oh.
So listen, how do you spell your name? I mean, how do you pronounce it? Banita?
Banita.
Banita?
It's like Anita, but it starts with a V.
Cool. That's such a cool name. And what is it exactly that you do? Because I was trying to, I know what a certified nurse midwife is.
That's what I am. Cool. We're like nurse practitioners, but they don't call us nurse practitioners because OBGYN nurse practitioners don't do births. So a certified nurse midwife is like an OBGYN nurse practitioner, but who also attends births.
Do you stay with a person and help them through the whole process, or?
It depends on how things are set up with that. Yeah, with when I had a home birth practice, I was with women, you know, from active labor until, on average, 4 hours after the birth, till we decided a mother and baby were stable. But in hospital settings, sometimes like in a major medical center I worked at, I wasn't there for the entire labor because we had other patients and a lot going on. And nurses did a lot of the labor care also. But when we were lucky, we could spend a lot of time with the woman.
And Banita, you had a very early calling to be a midwife. Can you tell our audience about that?
Yeah, I was in physical reality because I met a shaman lately who told me that I decided when I was being born that the experience was so horrific. I thought, well, I kind of came in to help change the way things are done around here, and it looks like birth's not a bad place to start. But I have no memory of that, just this shaman keeps telling me that. But for me, when I was 16 years old, I was reading an article about the nurse midwives in the Air Force, U.S. Air Force, because they use a lot of nurse midwives, and I was like, I want to do that.
That's pretty amazing, right? I mean, at that early age.
Yeah, I'd never heard of nurse midwives before, you know.
Right, and it's not a common term. I think it's becoming more in our vocabulary nowadays, but certainly.
Well, that's one of my goals. My goal is to get the term midwife and nurse midwife to be as common as general contractor.
That would be great. And you've written a lot of articles on the cesarean birth rate, correct?
Yes.
And what the why we have such a high rate of cesareans in our society today. And, you know, what are some of those statistics?
The C-section rate hit 32 point. When I started my career, it was somewhere in the teens. And it just climbed and climbed and climbed throughout my career. And then it dropped for a little while when there was this big surge of doing a lot of vaginal births after cesareans. And then that changed for various reasons, and it just started to climb and climb again. I thought it was outrageous when we were in the 20s. And then we maxed out at 32.9%. And we've been hanging out since 2016 at 32%.
And did you see the reason why it was climbing at the time, or was this like afterthought research that you'd done on it?
The reasons it was climbing?
Right. At the time, did you know why it was climbing at the time?
Oh, it was, I mean, I was working in hospitals and stuff. I mean, it was obvious to me that it was this very unbalanced medical approach to childbirth that was the primary. I mean, there's a lot of causes, and people can read my blog if they like, but to me, the primary cause is the over-medicalization of birth.
And wasn't then, it the doctors? It wasn't convenient for the male doctors at the time if a baby was born outside of the Monday through Friday, 7 to 6 o'clock p.m.?
Yeah, I think that statistic really drives the point home, because when I was doing the research for the website, it showed that the majority of births are still happening inside of U.S. hospitals. 98.5% of all babies are still being born in hospitals.
That is, wow, okay. And what you're trying to drive home is you can have your baby at home and have a wonderful birthing experience.
Well, I'm not really selling home birth. I just want to educate women about the issues. And have them explore all their options, because obviously when you're 98.5%, there's women who should never be giving birth at home. I would never tell a woman where she should give birth. I counsel women to help them figure that out for themselves, what works for them. But when you have 98.5% of women delivering at hospitals, I mean, obviously a lot of women are going to continue to do that. But what I found alarming from the Center for Disease Control Statistics, which I did not realize, was that births in hospitals are now happening between 9 and 5 Monday through Friday. And in general, I mean, obviously not all of them, but the majority of births are happening during normal business hours. When you look at the women giving birth outside of the hospital, either at home or in these independent birth centers, the majority, of course, babies in either place are born all the time, but the majority of births out of hospital are happening between 1 a.m. and 5 a.m.
Interesting.
So it seems that naturally there's a predisposition that babies would be born in the middle of the night.
Right, I would think so, too. And a mother just can't hold off her delivery, can she?
What?
A mother can't just, like, I heard in the olden days that women were, like, told to hold their legs shut to wait for the doctor to come so they could deliver their baby. Is that
true?
Yeah,
there was, and that is considered, I still hear that, and it's so disturbing to me. Because even in nursing textbooks, it says you should never try to stop a child from being born. But the hospital thing was set up. And, you know, once a physician actually said to me, because he missed a birth and in a hospital setting, he missed the birth. And I said something like, hey, you should pay me for the delivery I was working there actually as a nurse then, and he was like, we can't have these babies being born without us there because I had a mother who refused to pay.
But there's legalities involved.
And, yeah, that's probably the biggest problem we have in the United States is there's so much fear around childbirth, and it's not that way in other countries that have better statistics than us.
Is Europe a lot better than we are?
All the developed nations of the world have better infant and maternal mortality statistics than the United States.
Interesting.
Because we're using too much technology. Most of
the overload of technology, then, is what you're saying, is the reason.
There's too much of technology is great. I've been a high-tech nurse. I've worked in major medical centers with high technology. High-tech stuff is awesome when you need it, but it's being used with the majority of women who do not need it, and it's causing problems. But even more than the technology, it's really the mindset. You know, there's this overly medical mindset. I wrote once, you know, scientific does not equal technological. Because people get seduced when they see all these machines and beeping stuff and all these complicated things. They think that means good care. But that stuff's only good care if it's being used when it's appropriate to the situation. And having done a lot of home births, and I had a lot of equipment with me, we only used it when I thought it was useful.
And I've heard you say in other interviews that technology is very useful, like you just said, but the attendees, the nurses, the doctors, tend to look at the machines more than care for the actual woman on the table having a baby.
Yeah, it's pretty fascinating because I've seen fathers do that too. Fathers like sit there and they're like, they don't know how to read the graphs, right? I mean, you need special training to read those graphs and to understand what the data is saying and to interpret it and to understand what artifact is. And there's a lot, like there's whole books written about fetal heart rate monitoring and uterine monitoring. And fathers sit there and they often get obsessed with the graph, and then the machine, if the mother moves, the machine beeps, and then everybody like freaks out because they watch ER on TV and they think like someone's flatlined, and it's really pretty, like it's a really weird actually set of circumstances. But actually, that's another good point, is because those electronic fetal monitors, and again, they can be really useful. And there were times I transported a woman from who was having a home birth to the hospital because, like, I was trained visually looking at graphs, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So there were times, like, I wanted to see the graph, you know, because I couldn't tell exactly, like, what was happening, and I wanted to see a graph. So, like, it's not like I am against anything, but things have gotten really out of balance. But we know that when those electronic fetal monitors started being used, that the cesarean rates leapt up. And those monitors really should not be being used routinely with the majority of normal, healthy women.
Interesting. So who determines whether a woman would have a vaginal birth as opposed to a cesarean? Is it the doctors, who determines that, I guess it's from their history, correct, or their health history?
Well, no, but you can't do a cesarean on anybody without a surgeon, and all obstetricians are surgeons. So we've had this experimentation that's only maybe a little bit, like 125 years old, of having surgeons be the primary birth attendants. And I think that's something we need to think about because it doesn't seem to be a really great model. All those other countries that have better birth statistics than the United States, they have more midwives, lots more midwives. Often midwives, in some countries, women see a midwife and she will not see an obstetrician unless the midwife decides she wants an obstetrician. You know, she feels like she needs an obstetrician because there's certain medical problems going on. They have more midwives. Some of those countries have more home births, a lot more home births, and they have some form of universal national health care.
So how much time, as a midwife, I mean, you have the hands-on experience with the woman herself, and it's more of an organic process, wouldn't you say?
You know, with the midwifery model says that women can give birth, and they just need the proper education and attention and, you know, love and support, encouraging support, you know, and then all midwives, educated midwives have, you know, a lot of skills to deal with issues when they arise.
Yeah. How did they do it in the old days?
In the old days,
they had birth then, right? Women have been having babies forever.
Yeah, I've heard that actually. I've heard about that.
Yeah.
The model, the traditional model, we lived more in tribes or villages. And there was usually a village herbalist who was the healer, the medicine woman, the midwife, too. And women were surrounded by the women who were their family and friends, people they probably knew their whole lives. And the midwife was there, too. And that's how birth was for thousands of years.
On my mom's side, they're from Puerto Rico, and on my dad's side, from Cuba. And both of them, the culture is you have birth at home.
Yeah. Well, I think we're going to go back to more births at home, actually. I would like to see that. Like Holland has a third of their births at home with professional educated midwives. That's the country where you go see a midwife unless she decides you need a doctor. So a third of their births are at home with professional midwives, and women can have hospital births with the professional midwives.
I read that there's a big difference between babies born in hospitals and babies born either at home or in a more natural environment.
In what way, Andrew, are you thinking?
Well, for starters, one of the ways is that a baby's exposed to a wide range of electromagnetic waves and buildings and all kinds of stuff like that that could cause a problem down the road in terms of a wide range of health problems. And another issue would be something to do with bacteria in terms of they're getting exposed to a wide variety of bacteria right away that you would find in a hospital. Unless you read about all the different things that is happening now with tools and all kinds of things, so you can expose you to that too. And also too, I think it's in terms of mental, in terms of what happens with how the child feels in a hospital as opposed to being in a more natural environment for the kid, you know. Also, the other thing was, I think it has to do with, what do they call it when you're born in the water? They do it in the water.
Just water birth.
Right, so I think there was the whole thing about that was very different also.
The experience for the baby and the mother?
Yeah, well, you've brought up, like, a lot of issues. To me, the whole electromagnetic field and in a hospital setting, I think we need a lot more research about that, right? Because we're really learning a lot about how EMFs affect us. Kaiser did a study, which I found like really alarming, that the rate of miscarriages with women just with their cell phones was unbelievable, the rate of miscarriages.
Right.
From women just carrying a cell phone on their body or sleeping with a cell phone by them. But, yeah, to me, I don't know. I loved being in people's homes. It was simpler. It was just more human. Women seemed, if they weren't frightened, right, like if they wanted to be at home and they were more relaxed at home, like it just, there was a simpler, more human.
To me, the way I got involved with this is that people would ask me to come to their home because, for example, a lady was pregnant. She's going to have a kid. She'd have it at home. And she didn't really want the pest control man to come around anymore. So she was battling that with her husband. Well, honey, it's safe. No, it's not. Yes, it is. No, it's not. Yes, it is. No, it's not. You know, and so there's a whole types of bunch of exposure, chemical exposure that you would give your child if you do it at home and you're not really paying attention to what you're doing. It's starting with the lawn. I have lots of people call me up all the time or email me. Either my dog or my cat or my child, because a lot of times you take your child out and walk, you know, let him walk around the lawn, you know, they become allergic to these different types of chemicals and they get exposed to chemicals, wide variety of chemicals that get exposed at early age. So that's been my area, is to help people. Well, you know, you can have a natural lawn. You don't have to do the chemicals. You don't have to spray the pesticide in the home. It's more toxins being used in a home, right, in the kitchen. And you can find them in the kitchen sink than almost any place.
Well, there is research with pesticides were associated with more miscarriages, more birth defects, and more stillbirths. There was a study showing there's a thing called hypospadias, which is a penis mm-hmm. defect. The urethra is not in the right
place. I didn't want to hear that. No, I'm okay. What? Sorry.
But they showed, though, with organic, women who ate organic foods had less of that problem. And they also had less, if they ate a lot of organic foods, had less preeclampsia, which some lay people call toxemia, but which is a really very serious pregnancy complication, very dangerous late pregnancy.
One of the Kardashians had that, I believe. I remember hearing about preeclampsia.
Yeah. I didn't know about that, but preeclampsia is dangerous, right? So they've shown that organic foods have helped decrease the rates of preeclampsia. So that was...
Personally, I think what they should do is they should have, like, a section of the country or the city, some parts, you know, where they don't allow chemicals, and a lady can go and have a baby and be surrounded by flowers and trees, no chemicals, no radiation, and let the kid grow until he's old enough. And then you send him out to the rest of the toxic world. But at least he had a chance to, you know, or she had a chance to grow. Because you're surrounded by toxins. I mean, in the hospital, you're surrounded by all types of toxins. You go home, you're surrounded by all types of toxins. You're in the car, you're driving to and from, you're surrounded by toxins. So and at early age, you know, you're just going to get toxins after toxins. I have people who live downstairs. A mother was pregnant and smoking cigarettes. And she still has a baby. She's still smoking cigarettes. The husband, too. Right? So it's like...
people are addicted. You know, I work in a big prenatal clinic, and, you know, tobacco's... I'm always shocked, right, because people I know don't smoke, you know. But there's a lot of women... who are smoking, they're addicted, and it's a pretty intense addiction. And that's...
Transfers right to the kid in a lot of ways. It's very, very toxic in a lot of ways. And for the child, I also deal with animals, because animals are like little children that you think of the size. They walk around their lawn, they get exposed all the time. And it's the same thing that happened to your kid. Roundup, very, very, very bad. Weed and feed, all kinds of stuff you're exposed to. And it's really getting harder and harder to survive through this initial stages of growth and make it through at the other end halfway normal.
Well, you know, it's interesting because we know that in the Western world, men's sperm counts are down 50%.
I didn't want to hear that. I'll be okay. No, I'm not used to all this attack on the male system here. Never mind.
But I was shocked when I saw, and they think, like, not just pesticides, but BPAs, in the plastics.
There's all kinds of stuff. We're doing everything we can to pollute ourselves. And let's see what I wrote an article on. 10 ways to kill all living beings on the planet. It turns out that somebody else did a scientific review. It says these are 10 environmental barriers we're not supposed to cross. And guess what? We crossed all of them. And you name one, like from clean water, right? The clean food, clean air. We have crossed them to the point now I have no idea what to do in terms of, you know, trying to help in that level, let alone to try to make people aware, hey, you know, your child, right? It needs all these things much more than we do, believe it or not. They need clean water, they need clean air, they need right clean food, you know, and it's a trick. And that's why I have you on, because I want to help people to understand that you can't be having cigarettes and have kids. You can't really, seriously, you can't go off in the corner and smoke and then come back and say, I'm okay with child.
Yeah, that's why I was glad for the work you do, because the work you do, to me, when I'm exposed to people who are, you know, bringing in the new way and helping support the new way, because I live in a very progressive community where there's tons of organic people into organic food and, you know, living healthy and doing yoga, and I live in a rural community. Like, there's, where I live is very aware, people are very aware.
Where do you live?
Nevada City.
I know Nevada City. I go to Grass Valley all the time.
Oh, do you?
Yes, ma'am.
What do you come up here for?
I'm always in the Yuba River.
Oh, yeah, everybody loves the Yuba River.
Yeah, I only go when everybody's naked, because I don't like to go clothing. But when I go there, I know it's the right time, because I have the sixth sense in me. You went, oh, it's the naked time, you know. Ask Deborah, I'm actually the naked gardener. any excuse to run around naked. Anyway, you know, Yuba River, there's a place, there's certain sections there that it's against the law to swim with clothing on. Just making that up, but that's true, isn't it, right? Yuba River, I go there when it's freezing, you know. Anyway, never mind. That's just another.
Well, there's generally accepted things that people don't go naked around the bridges and stuff like that. You kind of just to not shock the people not into it. But so I'm lucky because I live in a community that is very health conscious. And do your, Andrew, your listeners in general, they're familiar, right? Like with the Dirty Dozen and the Clean 15 lists and all that?
I'm sorry, say that again. Is that the name of the movie? Because I know I saw The Dirty Dozen.
No, The Dirty Dozen, the list of produce that you should eat, it's preferred you eat it organic because it has higher levels of pesticides. They call it The Dirty Dozen.
What type of foods are out there with pesticides? You can go ahead and say it, because there's, you know, I'm pretty sure that there are some that collect more than others, and they're heavily used, but please do. I mean, I stay on top of these things because that's what I do in terms of, you know, understanding what the GMOs are, what GEOs, genetically engineered foods are, recently there was an article about, you know, the Roundup was in everything, almost every food, including some certified organic food. But anyway, go ahead. The Dirty Dozen.
Well, yeah, there's no way to have this stuff in the environment and keep it out. It's just that organic food is going to have less of it, you know?
Hopefully, yes.
But it seems from the studies that showed they did have less, but there's no way to have completely pure food when the environment is, you know, been...
Yeah, especially like in transportation. They ship the organic stuff with the conventionally grown organic stuff in the same container. You know, there's very rarely it's set up. And you can test it. A lot of people have tested organic produce, and they find that it's contaminated. It's safe when it leaves, but it's contaminated by the time it gets there.
Really?
You know, the only solution to that, right, is you learn to grow it yourself or to know the grower. Go right, get it directly from the grower.
You know, it was interesting because there's been periods I eat a lot of organic food. And I do want to make a point, though, because some people can't afford to eat all organic. That's why I'll go over the Dirty Dozen and then the Clean 15, because there's foods that it's more important to eat organic, and then others that are safer that you, if you can't afford all organic, to eat them.
Is that information located somewhere? In other words, can you post it so I can share it with everybody? Because that seems like a really good information to keep passing around all the time. You know, the Dirty Dozen and the Clean 15.
If
you got to eat something, these are the things you definitely do not want to eat, because they're going to be sprayed heavy. You know, in my opinion, they're all done. But it's true, there are some that are a lot cleaner that you can get away with eating. Because I know a lot of friends that say, look, I can't go shopping organic produce and pay $400 for a bag of stuff, you know.
No, I know. So the, but one point I do want to make, because it looks like from the studies, because they're concerned, like when they said, well, you know, these foods you should eat organic, that people, if they couldn't afford organic, stopped eating them. And strawberries and apples seem to be two of the worst things that you should, like, you should eat it organic, right?
Yes,
I mean, the apples have these pesticides on it that were associated with decreased intelligence and increased attention problems in children and more hormone problems in adults. But the foods, you're, it is, but they want people to eat, if you can't afford to eat organic, you should still be eating the fruits and vegetables, because they are inherently good for you, even if you can't eat them organic, you know?
Can you wash, but, can you wash it off the outside of the fruit at all, like a strawberry, or wash
yeah,
it?
Yeah. Well, the strawberries, a lot of these are high water content.
Yeah.
So, like, the pesticides inside of it. But let me read the foods that are supposed to be inorganic, ideally, and then I can also talk about other ways to reduce pesticides. But the dirty dozen is strawberries, spinach, nectarines, apples, grapes, peaches, cherries, pears, tomatoes, celery, potatoes, right, things that grow inside the ground, and sweet bell peppers. Those are the ones that you should eat organic if you can afford to. And then obviously the foods, the meat, the milk, the dairy, and the meats, you know, because they're higher up on the food chain, butter and cheeses, because the fats, usually the pesticides are held in the fats. And if you can't buy organic dairy and meats, you know, you should trim the fat off the meats as much as possible, and or eat low-fat dairy. But here, let me read the Clean 15, because I think the Clean 15
That rhymes.
I know, it's lovely. avocados, sweet corn, pineapples, cabbages, onions, sweet peas frozen. I don't know why that would be different. Papayas, asparagus, mangoes, eggplants, honeydew melons, kiwis, cantaloupes, cauliflower, and broccoli. That's the Clean 15. But what's fascinating to me is, like, the organic food tends to be grown more organic, you know, more consciously, and it seems to have higher nutrients in it. Like the grass-fed organic beef, it's leaner, right, because they're not giving it corn, and then it has five times the omega-3s, which have been associated with increased attention spans.
That's the idea. That's why you do grow organic. But by the way, the Clean 15, there's a few of them there that are not really so clean if you actually count that the fact that they get gassed. And they get gassed with a chemical when, if they're imported from, even if they're certified organic, they still would get gassed. That means they would put on a boat, you know, and they would put in a compressed unit, and they would get gas, so they wouldn't ripen. And that's not exactly clean. and
right. Plus, corn's on here, right? But most of the corn in the U.S. is GMO.
I'm so glad. Exactly right.
But that was from a pesticide point of view. But the GMO, anyway. That's just what this list said from the Environmental Working
right.
Group.
I was going to mention this corn, because the corn, unless it's certified organic, it's a type of genetically engineered corn, and which is not exactly the best to eat at all, really, seriously. Any of the genetically engineered foods are not really ideally to eat unless they were made. That's one of the subjects I talk a lot about, you know, genetically engineered. I don't like to say genetically modified organisms because people are already confused about it in terms of genetic understanding what GMOs are. And so I talk about genetically engineered organisms, which kind of explains that you think, well, engineered, wow, that's the idea, see. So, you know, I believe that they can be done if a scientist was working for the benefit of mankind. Genetically engineered, they could be genetic. You can have corn that's genetically engineered to grow at sea level at a much higher temperature, for example, without fertilizers, without having any Roundup in it, and maybe it actually be nutritional. And given the amount of time people have, you know, because of the climate change, it's getting hot really fast. You don't have time to develop a corn over years that will grow, like that you have to have corn right away, that you, or any type of food you need to develop in right away to allow it to grow in this changing environment. So that's another story there, which I always throw in terms of genetically modified. And you'll find that a lot of the stuff on the clean 15, when you really look at it, it may be clean, but like you were saying before, you know, in terms of organic produce, because it is supposed to, and it does, if it's grown correctly, it will be more nutritionally, either minerals or whatever. You know, there are lots of different vegetables and stuff that all have different products that they naturally produce, which, if they're done correctly, would be beneficial. Would be, and you name this whole list of things that you can get if you eat organically grown produce, as opposed to the very same produce that's not organically grown, it wouldn't be as nutritional for you. So even though it may be clean, but the bottom line I'm saying is that what I fight for is that it shouldn't cost you more to buy things organically. It isn't that way. An organic farmer is sustainable, which means he could do it over and over and over again and get better and better and better. It should be costing less and less and less and not more and more and more.
Right. I think it's funny when people act like, you know, organic food is foo-foo. I'm like, organic food is what food always was before commercially, you know, industrialized farming practices.
Anita, do you have any concerns about pasteurized or ultra-pasteurized milk given to a baby? I've heard it takes all the nutrients out of it to pasteurize it, and there's a raw milk movement.
Yeah, that's always a tricky thing as a Western medical professional, because you know, obviously if it's raw milk, there's always concerns about bacterial contamination, mm-hmm. which, you know, that's why we started to pasteurize milk. But it does seem that all this pasteurization we know is killing enzymes and leading to more lactose intolerance and problems there. But I would never, like, as a health professional, recommend people do raw milk because of the possible contamination. It's a tricky thing.
When I grew up in Puerto Rico or Cuba, I remember in Puerto Rico, my parents, I would go out. My great-grandmother would say, here's a bucket, there's the cow, and I would milk it, you know. And I would drink the warm milk, and I remember doing that for a long time until I decided I didn't like milk anymore. But my parents said that was supposed to be, that's very good, and they've always done that, you know, in their family for generations.
Well, to me, right, if you were milking it yourself, right, you would know how clean the containers were and how clean your hands were and
exactly,
the others
right.
clean, right? But, like, exactly. I walked into a raw milk dairy farm a few years ago, right, and I was, like, horrified, right, that...
I know.
The cows were, like, standing in mud, and there was mud all over their udders, and
there's no comparison. Even 100 years ago, the farming technologies that techniques, because now instead of having, you know, I tell people all the time, is people used to have 100 head of cattle. Now there's, like, 10 million head of cattle. Big difference in how they take care of and deal with it in terms of, and the same thing with farmers, farming. You know, farming is a different... The whole farming thing is so way off whack. It's just like medicine. It's all way off whack. It's not geared anymore for health, but it's geared for money. How do we sustain money income? You know, the same thing with farming. You know, agriculture is based upon money now rather than sustainability and being actually good farmers and good doctors, you know?
See, we're seeing that in childbirth. I want to say, because, like, I have a local following, and people always think I'm talking locally, but my mission is to educate women nationally, because actually locally, I feel like our local hospitals, you know, are more enlightened and has a less C-section rate than the rest of the country. But these are like national problems. So this mass production, right, we're talking about mass production compared to smaller, simpler things where people maybe are paying more attention. They're more conscious about what they're doing. There was some hospital administrator in Texas who, you know, called the labor and delivery unit an assembly line, and I think he got fired for saying that in public. But, you know, I've worked in these some of these huge hospitals, and they are like, they can be like assembly lines, you know? And I think people need more attention. They need more care, just like the vegetable. Everything needs care and attention and consciousness, you know, love, I think, if we will.
I think that, if I may add something to it, I think you should also include us men in educating. So if you educate us both, the male and the females, you can educate the woman, yeah, but I think the guys really need education too. The men need to understand how far they're getting away from everything. And it's a big issue too, because you really are talking about a way of life, how to deal with life, how to deal with other people, and how to deal with cultures, how to deal with the earth. Because you can't do this kind of toxic thing and expect to survive. And other people have to do it together. What's the point if you are the only person, you know, that has a nice environment and everybody else is destroying the environment? Right now, we all need to pay attention to our environment. Otherwise, all these issues are moot, because our babies being born in toxic environments won't last very long.
You know, that brings up a point. Hospitals are one of the largest producers of garbage.
Yeah.
You know, and yep. Like that's a pretty fascinating fact in and of itself.
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure that the other producers, I mean, you know, a long time ago, I always thought that, it seems like we should be able to figure out a way how to make this garbage either useful or disappear, you know. I think that makes money for people. So until that, we have to take that away. The same thing with nuclear power. People saying it's, you know, we need to have a more nuclear power because it's clean energy, as long as you ignore the toxic radiation waste, you know.
So, Vanita, herbs on your website for mothers?
Yeah, I have a whole line of from a company I really admire for mothers and for children, of different herbal remedies for different things related to pregnancy and childbirth. And there's also the issue with organic food, right, is the antibiotics that people are getting exposed to. And, you know, I found it fascinating because in Western medicine, because I'm a Western medical provider, when I have a woman who is breastfeeding, has a breast infection, the standards are to give her antibiotics immediately, right? Because those breast infections can get bad really quickly and women get very sick from them. But when I had my private practice in 10 years, because I used to keep these herbs in my office, these herbal compresses, these poultices, that dried herbs that people could sort of like big tea bags and put them on their breasts, and then a tincture that had echinacea and marshmallow root and these other things in it. In 10 years of practice, I only had to use antibiotic once for a breast infection. So I don't use that here now, because I would have to have it like immediate. Like then, people, they were my patients, and they would call me, and I'd say, you know, send someone over here to get, you know, these herbs and start them right away. And it worked like it was like a miracle to me. These herbs, I loved them.
What is the website? Is that Awakening Birth Now?
Yes, awakeningbirthnow.com.
Cool. People should go there and check it out. Is it like a membership, or do you have like products?
Well, they can buy, these herbs are available that they can purchase. It's really an informational, educational website where I talk about from my experience of being, you know, doing this for 35 years, trying to educate women about what's happening, the downsides of over-medicalization in the United States, and turn them on really to a better way.
Well, I really like what you're doing. Just remember to educate men and women.
Willing to educate anybody who's willing to listen. Grandparents, actually, like, I think it'd be really cool to educate grandparents, because sometimes, you know, younger people, they're so busy, right? And if you could educate, I mean, some grandparents are super busy too, but educate the grandparent. I educate everybody, anybody. can't separate. See, this is the problem with that type of thinking, this fragmented thinking, right? How do you separate, like, a father's health from the baby's health? You can't, you know? Like, I mean, when the Western male sperm count is down 50%, I mean,
said that
God.
Thing again. Don't say that again. Oh, God. Oh, okay. All right. You said that thing about, count going down. I can't do it. Okay, go ahead.
Well, it's disturbing. It's disturbing information. And
that's his kid.
But I feel super heartened because, like I said, I live in a really progressive community where, like, people are eating organic food and they exercise and they're outdoors a lot and they're really conscious about, like, you walk around my town, people are all drinking out of glass jars instead of, crystal geyser bottles that are BPA.
Well, the consciousness is there. Unfortunately, what's happening, like I said before, we are being bombarded with toxins all over the place, from electromagnetic frequencies, toxins in the air, toxins in the water, it's tons of stuff all the time. Our cell phones, so it's like you're being bombarded.
The radiation from Fukushima.
Right, exactly. And, not just from Fukushima, but you also have the nuclear power plant that's got shut down here in San Diego. It's leaking, the storage is not exactly the best way to do it. And you have to take into account, too, that every nuclear plant in the world is leaking radiation in one form or another, including the fact that they dump, they put it in their backyard. There's no place for them to store it. And there's, tons of radiation going on all over the place, from in the water. Like, they were testing the water here in Southern California with a helicopter for radiation. And then they took it. They said we're going down for maintenance, and they didn't bring it back up. The reason for that is because they found that the radiation level already exceeded safe levels. They found whales were dying from radiation exposure. They found a ship that I don't even know about. It was empty ships off the coast somewhere that the barnacles were radiated. If they were radiated, they had to take all the barnacles off. We're surrounded with toxins left and right, and it's all affecting the children, the dogs. Anybody, it's slowly, the bigger you are, the longer I guess it takes to affect you. But anyway, we probably should go, I think. We have some more time, but I do appreciate you.
Could I end with just talking about the microbiome and cesareans?
And the vaginal bacteria, that would be great.
Is that okay, Andrew?
Say that again. I only got the biome part.
Could I just talk briefly about the how cesareans are increasing diseases in children, because it looks like it's altering their immune system. Children,
yes, it is.
Born by cesarean have an altered immune system, it looks like, because they have different, they're not being born through the mother's vagina, and they're not getting all the bacteria that they normally would be inoculated with. And these children now are being born with more allergies, asthma, autoimmune disorders, obesity, type 1 diabetes, because there's an autoimmune thing with type 1 diabetes, and celiac disease is increasing because of C-sections. And C-sections are great when they are needed. They are totally life-saving, but we know that well over 50% of all the C-sections in the U.S. are not necessary.
I do another show called The Body in the Garden. And the reason I started doing that is because I would invite doctors on, specifically people who are into the biognome, the human biognome, biomeme, right?
Microbiome. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. because I want to educate people in the fact that the soil has its own microbiological life, as the stomach does, and that we evolved from the soil, and that the similarities are absolutely amazing, and how they work and how they function. And in our human body, if our stomach is not, if that's not functioning right, the whole system is not going to be working right. Your whole body is not going to be working right. And the key, and it's passed on from, that's how we get it from our mother. And if we don't get the essential biological life that we need, we're not going to be able to continue because we're going to have a whole bunch of other problems, which all related to how these creatures work in our bodies, what they do and how they absorb the nutrition and minerals. It's identical with plants in a lot of ways. So it's called body in the garden. And that's why I also relate it to with children, because, you know, a kid should be able to play in the vegetable garden without getting exposed to some life-altering drug. Because one of the things that happens, in my opinion, is that any drug that the kid gets exposed to will affect your biological microbial life immediately in your stomach and your gut, right? Because a lot of them, you know, take their mouth and put it in their mouth and do stuff. So if you have a toxin, you put that in, like Roundup, for example, or any other type of pesticide you get in your body. That's another issue that I always tell people. You know what you're doing, right, to your kids, right?
Yeah, I'm so excited that this stuff is coming out and, you know, people are realizing it and making better choices, because to me that's the hope, you know, that's the new way, that's the better way, you know.
Right, but watch TV and they'll tell you, look, eat whatever you want, do whatever you want, take this pill. And they're being trained to believe certain things, that they can just keep behaving that way just as long as they do this particular thing. So the education has to happen on the other end of it too. That's one of the things you're doing. You have to teach, you know, because it's important that the parents, the mother and the father, and maybe the family involved, understand that they, you know, there's not just food and it's not just certain, but it's the chemicals that they're using in their everyday life that they have to stop, starting with cigarettes, right? Starting with drugs or whatever, alcohol, whatever stuff, and paint and whatever they're using on their lawn. I mean, it's amazing. These people don't seem to connect them together.
Because we're so far away to how we used to grow food and raise animals, I think, you know. Children today don't know how food is produced.
No. I gave a class once for gardening, and I brought some seeds, and the kids were like, so, where are the carrots? And then when they stuck them in the ground, the next week I came back and I said, where are the carrots? I said, dude, you got to wait 30 to 60 days for where are they? And they kept pulling them up. I don't see anything. I said, you're not going to keep seeing it. You keep pulling them up. And they did not even get the idea that I go to the store and buy them. No, you grow them. Duh. And it's like, yeah, they have no idea. And they grow up.
We definitely need to be moving back to more closer to the earth, you know.
Living in a farm, right? Everybody should live on a farm.
I don't know if that's going to happen, but we definitely.
Oh, sure. After 90% of the people on the earth die, the 10% will live on a farm. There'll be farms everywhere. It'd be cool.
So Vanita, you give you don't just practice, you know, up here in Northern California, but you give private sessions, right, by Skype, Zoom, or phone to people that are interested in knowing more about pregnancy, birth, and all that you offer?
Yes. I'm a cesarean prevention and holistic birth expert, and I love guiding women and helping educate women on all different levels, you know, truly holistic care. You know, dealing with it, what's happening in their lives and what they're eating and their relationships and, yeah, all of it.
So terrific. Okay, so go to awakeningbirthnow.com.
Yeah, right, awakeningbirthnow.com.
It was lovely talking to you, too.
Thank you, Vanita. You have a wonderful day.
Yes,
okay,
thank you, too.
Thank you for coming. We'll invite you again soon, okay?
Sure, thanks so much.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Okay, everybody. So we've got a bunch of things to do before we have to hang up. First of all, we have a winner for our contest. Did you know that, Deborah, we have a winner?
From New York, no less.
Oh, I told you that, did I? yeah.
You tell me everything, Andy.
His name is Bill G. I don't mention the last name. I couldn't mention his last name anyway. It's a very interesting name. It must be like Russian, or it could be, you know. But it's from Merrick, Long Island, New York. Merrick.
So what did he get for winning the contest, Andy?
Well, he's going to get, for starters, he's going to get the two of my books. The first, you know, the one book's in color and one book's in black and white. The color one's not really available on the market. It's $100 book because it's in color, and the black and white version is $20, but it's a black and white version. So you put away the color version. I would cover it, put a cover on it, and put it in glass and wear gloves, and you use it. And then the black and white version, go ahead and use it. But you'll be able to sell the color version for quite a bit of money because we're only going to print like 100 of them, you know. And so there's a limited edition, maybe a few hundred at the most. It's not available in the stores. And then you also get a lifetime membership to the club. And at the same time, you have access to over 20 of my books. And so as a member, you can download any of my books. I have Dances with Ants. It's the latest one I did before this one. I have a Natural Roach one, a Healthy Lawn one. So you'll get that. You'll get access to that, but you get a members podcast. The members podcast, basically, you get every show that I do. So not only do I do this show here, but I also have WTF. Show, which is What the Frack show, is about environmental issues. I also have a audiobook show. I do another show, which is on my music. Believe it or not, I have another show. All I just do is just do my shows. It's Inner Gardening. That's a free podcast. So let's see. The other thing is Eco Cat's going to be coming up next show. Oh, so we have a new contest now. You have to enter by sending me email, right? So a few people have actually been sending me emails. I'm surprised. I think I have two minutes. So then there's a whole bunch of stuff coming up next few months. Next week we're doing compost tea. So I'll be talking about compost tea, what is it, how to use it. After that, we're going to have a person named Thomas Vanacor of the Rock Dust Local from Vermont. We're going to be doing a lot of stuff on with rock dust, okay? Then at the end of the month, or in October, we're going to be doing Back to Bricks, Minerals, and Pests and Diseases. And then next month, we'll be doing some more stuff. We're doing lots of stuff, compost. Matthew Earth from Earthford is going to be back on again, talk about the soil testing. And then I'm doing a whole show about super seaweed. And basically, I'm going to try to explain to people what it is that I do with my super seaweed and try to explain to them a little bit how I make it. So you may want to take notes. And then the last, November 24th, we're doing Natural Disease Control 101. We didn't really mention any number to call. Usually when we have a guest, we try to not take in callers, but ideally we should call in after the show. Sometimes you may want to talk to the guest. So that's Deborah's fault. And God just told me I have 20 seconds. So thank you very much for listening to my show. We'll be on again next Saturday. If you have any questions, you know how to get a hold of me on my website or right through the bbsradio.com. Thank you very much, and I guess we'll see you guys next week. Bye, Deborah.